Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The pandemic this year has put housing, what it means to us, who can afford it and who can't, front and center. We saw eviction, mortgage, and foreclosure delay efforts put in place to stop people from losing their homes. And just this week, the New York legislature passed a measure banning most evictions during the pandemic. But these are only temporary solutions. Here to help recap the year in housing and what we can expect in 2021 is Aaron Glantz. He's a senior investigative reporter with the public radio program Reveal and the author of the book Homewreckers. Welcome.
It's good to be with you.
Yeah, so let's start chronologically. The year began with the nation watching the Moms for Housing movement in Oakland, California. What was this movement really about? And remind us of it.
Well, I mean, it's pretty hard to even imagine that there was a time with no pandemic and we were dealing with issues like housing costs, sky-high real estate, gentrification, and also vacant housing in many of our cities that had been bought up during the Great Recession by shell companies. And in fact, there's been more than 3 million homes and 10 million apartments around the country that are now owned not by people, but by LLC, LLP, shell companies. And one of them was in West Oakland, and there were a number of moms who were homeless, and they saw this really nice house in this West Oakland neighborhood that had been bought up by the shell company, was sitting there empty, and they took it over, and they moved in, and it sparked national attention to this problem that we have, that we are losing control of our communities.
In the end, those moms actually won the right to stay in that home and have continued to organize. Here's Dominique Walker, one of the moms, speaking this past October.
It is going to get cold again, and there are still 4 empty homes for every 1 homeless person in the city of Oakland. And we have to come together and organize, especially now during COVID, to protect our neighbors and get them off the streets.
Aaron, this story really highlighted 2 problems, housing insecurity and the lack of affordable options. What did we see happen this year with housing affordability once the virus hit?
Well, one of the things that has been gratifying and actually kind of a bright side of this pandemic is that we have not yet seen a repeat of the tsunami of foreclosures and evictions that we experienced during the 2008 housing bust. This time, with the pandemic and sky-high unemployment and people being told to shelter in place, we did actually see through the CARES Act and through some executive actions of President Trump, people have not been thrown out onto the street. There are 3 million American homeowners now who are in forbearance. It means they have legally been allowed to fall behind on their mortgage. We have about 12 million Americans who are behind on their rent, which means they could get evicted if these eviction moratoriums end. But so far, they've been able to stay in their homes. So we've bought ourselves some time as we've all hunkered down. We've avoided the worst. But all of the fixes so far have been temporary.
Thinking specifically about renters, what are some things that you'll be watching for as we enter 2021 and throughout the year when it comes to protections for them and some of the things that they will be dealing with in the next few weeks and months ahead?
Well, as I mentioned at the outset, there's 12 million American families who are behind on their rent right now. They're behind on average about $5,000. We could see a potential tsunami of evictions. On the other hand, this may be mitigated somehow by the fact that landlords still need somebody to pay rent. And so if the landlord doesn't think that they can get another tenant to move in, if we're still in an economic depression, they hopefully will be able to, you know, tenants will have a little bit of leverage to bargain and gain some additional time from their landlords. The people who I'm really, really worried about right now over the next few months are actually the small landlords. If you're a big corporate Wall Street landlord, like the ones that I write about in my book, who came through after the housing bust and bought up tens of thousands of homes, this pandemic is nothing to you. Real estate values are still high. You just move your money around and ride it out. But if you are a family that own your own house, and maybe you just own one other property, you own one other house, and that other house is your life savings, you are counting on that tenant to make rent every single month. And with these eviction moratoriums being extended and no relief going to the landlords, we are seeing incredible pressure on these mom and pop landlords. And what's likely to happen, what I am most worried about actually, is that all of these mom and pop landlords all over America without relief will sell. And they will sell to the big private equity firms that don't live in the neighborhood, that don't know their tenants, where if the water main breaks, you have to go online through a portal or dial an 800 number instead of, you know, actually getting someone over to fix it. And I would be very, very worried about small mom and pop landlords. You know, this is primarily affects actually people of color who tend to be more likely to put their assets into real estate, especially immigrants, than the stock market. We could see a real shift in who owns our cities unless action is taken.
Something else that we saw this year, early indicators show that those who can afford to leave the city for rural or more suburban areas began to move during this pandemic. What does that mean? And do we expect to see more of that next year?
That's a really good question. It's, you know, then now you're asking me to look into like a crystal ball and see how this pandemic is going to go and how people are going to interact with each other. I will tell you something good, which is interest rates are very, very low right now. And so that means that if you own property, like I own my house, and I have a monthly mortgage payment, if I needed to reduce my expenses, I could refinance my house into a new loan at a lower rate and extend out my debt. And so that means that a lot of working class families, where their mortgage payment is by far and away their biggest monthly expense, are able to lower their expenses. It also means that middle class families have been able to buy homes. And so one of the most shocking things to me about the pandemic has been watching the home ownership rate go up during the pandemic. I mean, I would thought for sure that we would just be hemorrhaging homeowners. But, you know, people are able to get cheap access to capital. They're able to borrow money and move out of renting and into home ownership in ways that they hadn't been before. And then, of course, as you say, the more well-heeled who can afford to not only own their own home, but perhaps a second home or, you know, leave the city and move out to the suburbs are doing so. One of the effects that that's having for renters is that it's giving them some leverage. You know, we're seeing rents in high cost cities like San Francisco, where I live, go down 25%. So that means that our cities are getting more affordable. So question is, OK, let's say the pandemic ends, then what?
President-elect Joe Biden has nominated Representative Marsha Fudge of Ohio to be the new Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. What do you expect to see from the Biden administration? What will they do differently in the first year, do you think?
You know, it's really hard to tell because Marsha Fudge is not a person who has a huge track record on housing. But what I can say is, and this is of a great concern to me, the home ownership rate in America did not only decline in those early years of the Obama administration during the recession, but actually declined every single year between 2008 and 2016. And that further throughout that entire period, the Obama-Biden administration repeatedly chose to subsidize corporate Wall Street interests as they acquired houses that used to be owned by families, bundled them into mortgage-backed securities, rented them out at high cost, and generally speaking, oversaw the biggest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the rich in 100 years. And so the question that we should all be asking ourselves is, should we be concerned now with Biden coming in during a similar disaster about a repeat of that? What is his plan to avoid those same pitfalls? And I haven't heard anything, honestly, from him one way or the other that gives me confidence that he will or won't go in a certain direction.
Well, a lot to watch out for. Housing is an important issue. We'll continue to keep an eye on it now and in the new year. That's Reveal investigative reporter Aaron Glantz. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.